Thank you, Kim. Tonight we're doing the last in our series in 1 Peter, although we will, I hope, continue it at a later date. And the theme of tonight's passage, as you'll see in the little heading there, is submission to rulers and masters. And so it's an appropriate passage, really, for Palm Sunday, when Jesus enters Jerusalem, not as a conquering hero on a war horse, but meekly on a donkey. Philip Yancey described it as a slapstick comedy procession. And I'm not sure if that's quite right, but Jesus does come with remarkable gentleness, doesn't he? Humbly to submit to the authorities and to death. Well, in 1 Peter, we're getting towards the end of chapter 2, and Peter wants the early Christians to shine out in the world by their distinctive Christ-like humility. And verse 13 says, "Submit yourself for the Lord's sake," that's Jesus' sake, "to every human creature," is literally what it says in verse 13. That's quite a command, isn't it? Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human creature. Well, before we look at these words, let's remind ourselves what sort of person Peter was by nature. He was a man's man, wasn't he? An action man, a hard-working fisherman. He was impulsive, he was courageous. He was the first one over the side of the boat when Jesus walked on the water. And after the resurrection, when Jesus appeared on the shore, again, Peter was the first one to dive into the water and swim furiously to get to Jesus. So I don't think submission came naturally to him. And when Jesus knelt down in front of him to wash his feet, do you remember what Peter said? "No, you shall never wash my feet," he said. How could Jesus do that? And equally, when Jesus told him that he'd come to suffer, Peter said, "No, Lord, this shall never happen to you." So it looks as if submission was completely alien to Peter's natural inclinations. And when they came to arrest Jesus, Peter very courageously resisted. He took out his sword, cut the high priest's ear off, and to do that in front of a detachment of heavily armed Roman soldiers was effectively to, give up your life, because you were a goner, weren't you, if you did that. And if Jesus hadn't immediately healed the man's ear, Peter would be dead. So he was brave, almost reckless, and submission, I think we would agree, wasn't his way. And yet something happened to change him, some sort of self-quake within him that meant that everything had to be rethought in the light of Jesus and his meek submission to death on a cross. And Peter began to see that that revealed the very heart of God's love for the world. And so that meant that Peter had to change deep within. Jesus said, didn't he, "Blessed are the meek." And he described himself as meek, as humble in heart. And I guess we sort of naturally quickly think of meekness as weakness, which is probably how Peter thought of it until he spent those 3 years with Jesus. But actually, meekness is almost nearer the opposite of weakness. It is controlled strength. You may have heard me use this illustration before, but it's so good I keep using it. And it comes from my previous parish in Wandsworth, where the Young's Brewery, until recently, used these gigantic Clydesdale horses to deliver beer to the pubs around. And the Salvation Army Church was right opposite the entrance to the stables. And one day the captain there, Alan Norton, was speaking on "Blessed are the Meek." So without warning the congregation, he arranged for the groom to bring in this absolutely gigantic Clydesdale horse and just sort of lead it into the back. And then he said, "Just turn round." And there it was. And of course, these are huge, terrifying beasts that can instantly quell football crowds just by their presence. And yet it stood there completely obedient to the groom. And Alan said, "That is meekness. It's not weakness, it's controlled strength." And that is Jesus on the cross, isn't it? All the power in the universe, and yet meekly submitting himself to death. And so, you too, as his people, Peter says, for his sake, need to submit yourselves, humble yourselves to every human creature. Although it's translated every human institution, the Greek word katesis, 17 times it's used in the New Testament, and every time it means creature, someone created by God. And because they're God's creatures, you submit to them for Jesus' sake. So Peter then goes on to give a series of different examples of people with power. The king or emperor, that's the pagan Roman emperor. The Roman governors in each province. And then slaves submitting to their masters in verse 18. And then in the next chapter, which we're not looking at today, wives submitting to their husbands. And in that very male-dominated culture, of course, husbands had all the power. And it will seem unnatural, difficult to submit to these different people with power, to the pagan Roman emperor, to the unjust master, to the overbearing husband. But for Jesus' sake, said Peter, you should. Jesus' death and resurrection has made you see things in a completely different way. And it's produced in you, Christians, aliens, and strangers now in the world, the same kind of self-quake that it had brought to Peter. Now, it's striking that in that ancient world, humility was not seen as a virtue at all. It's only post the coming of Christianity that we've seen it as a virtue. Most of Aristotle's virtues, and he wrote a lot about virtue, we would easily identify with, things like courage, justice, prudence. But humility was never seen as a virtue. One writer says the word was really rarely used in Greek, and then only in a derogatory sense to denote servile weakness, obsequious groveling, or mean-spiritedness. To the Greeks, the Greek mind, there was nothing attractive about lowering yourself. And Greek and Roman gods were always squabbling and jockeying for positions of power. To lower yourself was the opposite of what you were meant to do. You were meant to seek for magnificence, to raise yourself up. So why would you ever lower yourself? And so no wonder Peter couldn't understand when Jesus knelt down in front of him to wash his feet or said he'd come to go to the cross. But of course, the more we think about Jesus' life, the more we realize his whole life was about lowering himself, becoming a human being, coming down from heaven, and being born as a baby is a massive lowering of himself. And then to live in poverty with no position or power. And then finally to die an ignominious death between two criminals on a cross. God lowers himself in Jesus Christ. And therefore, so must we. We submit to governments and to masters and even to our spouses. So governments don't have to worry about Christians because we're not seeking power. In China today, as you've heard me say before, there are more members of the Christian church than there are members of the Communist Party. But the government shouldn't see that as a threat, because the Christians, if they've read Peter, will be loyal citizens who are not seeking to take power or impose their will on others. They're meek like their Lord. And Peter says in verse 14, governors are sent by God to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. We know that all human communities need government. They need leadership. And we've seen in recent years in places like Iraq and Libya, you know, the catastrophe and the chaos that happens when there's no government. So Peter's saying, as Paul says elsewhere, you should submit even to a bad government. Now, of course, it's just worth saying that that doesn't mean that Christians have to obey the Nazis. And there are times when governments completely fail to punish wrongdoers and to commend the good. And in that case, of course, we have to resist them. And Paul Franklin talked about Dietrich Bonhoeffer in Nazi Germany in the morning last week. But those are very exceptional cases. Generally, even to bad governments or indifferent governments, Christians don't want to gain power, and they submit to those who do that very difficult job of exercising power. So humility becomes a key virtue. It is a key Christian virtue. You could say it's almost diagnostic of whether somebody has grasped the gospel or not. When you walk into a room, you can go in one of two ways. You can go in thinking, what can I get out of these people? What benefit can I accrue to myself from them? Or you can go in thinking, how can I serve them? What do they need? Well, how can I be a blessing to them? The Christian tries to go in thinking, what can I give them? And how can I seek their good? Now, that, of course, is not easy, and it takes some sort of self-quake even to begin to think in that way. And so I guess the next question is, where do we get the power to do it? Where does that self-quake come from? So just think for a minute about who Peter is asking here to submit. I think this section, which really kind of takes a lot of the rest of the letter, starts in verse 11, which Liz looked at last week. And it begins with the words, you'll see there, dear friends, literally dearly beloved. Dearly beloved, people who know that they're loved by one another and by God. And the paragraph before that starts with, you're a chosen people, a royal priesthood, belonging to God. Those are the people who are willing to submit. Only if we've grasped who we are in Christ can we begin to lower ourselves and give ourselves away. The philosopher Oliver O'Donovan said, true majesty is not afraid to stoop because it cannot be destroyed or lessened by stooping. True majesty knows that it can afford to stoop because its dignity is not dependent on how it relates to other people. And of course, Palm Sunday is about Jesus, the humble king. If we're secure in our status as part of God's royal priesthood, his holy chosen people, then we don't have to chase after the world's petty status baubles. And we can lower ourselves like a humble king. Martin Luther said, a Christian is the most free lord of all, subject to none, and the most dutiful servant of all, subject to all. Let me say that again, the most free lord of all, subject to none, and the most dutiful servant of all, subject to all. So we're free, live as free people, says Peter in verse 16. And once we grasp that status and freedom in Christ, we're able to serve others and give ourselves away. So I wonder where you are tonight. Maybe you're not a Christian. You're still thinking it through. You're still weighing up the evidence. And that's great. Take your time and think through it properly. But let me just take a couple of minutes to try and set out the unique spiritual freedom that knowing Jesus Christ brings. Live as free people. That freedom, I suggest, is quite simply what makes Christianity unique. So let's think about that freedom in Christ. Different from all the other religions. All the other religions, I suggest to you, are basically advice. Here's what you need to do to connect to God and the divine life. The gospel is not, first of all, advice, though of course there's plenty of advice that comes with it, but it is firstly news, news of what God has done for you. And so salvation is not something you achieve, but something you receive as a gift. You don't earn salvation by keeping a bunch of rules or joining a community. And all the other religions in the end put burdens on you. They may start by inspiring you, but in the end they give you a bunch of things you have to do to be okay, and that burdens you. The gospel, on the other hand, starts by taking the burdens off. The burden of trying to prove yourself, of doing enough, of being good enough. The burden of the past, the guilt and regret for the things you've done wrong, that's gone when you're in Christ. The burden of the future, the fear that you might not be able to do enough, that you might mess up at some point, that you might not live up to the standards required. That's a great burden in religion, isn't it? And yet in Christianity, that's gone because Jesus has done everything that needs to be done. That is Christian freedom. If you're from a traditional culture, the gospel takes off the crushing burden of parental expectation. You know, you're not defined by what your parents think of you. You are a chosen member of God's royal family. And if you're from a Western culture, it takes off the burden of achievement and self-fulfillment. You know, from the time you were very little, people have been asking you what you wanted to be. Astronaut, investment banker, Turner Prize winner, Oscar winner. You can be anything you want to be. It sounds liberating, doesn't it? Well, it isn't really. Because as time goes by, you realize you're never going to be any of those things. You tick them off one by one. I'm not going to achieve that. I'm not going to achieve that. And even if you do achieve them, they end up enslaving you. You know, they demand your soul. You have to give everything for them. Well, the gospel sets you free from those desperate burdens of self-fulfillment and achievement. You're not defined by your achievements or how much money you accumulate or how important your job is. You're eternally secure in Christ. That's what makes you who you are. And that is immensely liberating, isn't it? Or what about the burden of seeking fulfillment in this world? You know, read any of the celebrity stories in the Sunday papers today about searching for happiness in drink, drugs, sex, fame, and the emptiness and disillusion that produced. The Christian is set free from that desperate searching in this world because we know we're made for something beyond this world, for Christ. And that's why Jesus says the truth will set you free, and that freedom in him is what enables you to give yourself away and live as servants of God, as Peter says in verse 16. We're the most free lords of all and the most dutiful servants of all. And so we seek to serve and find the good for others in all our relationships. Verse 17, show proper respect to everyone. Love the brotherhood of believers, fear God, honor the king. Well, then in the paragraph from verse 18, most controversially to us, Peter asks slaves to submit to their masters with all respect. Not just to the good ones, he says very specifically, not just to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. And that even includes beating you physically, as he makes clear in verse 20. Now, slavery was absolutely part of the world in which they lived. People always talk about the wonderful democracy and freedom in Athens. Athens had 25,000 male citizens and 100,000 slaves. That was just normal. And slavery included a whole range of professions. It included things like teachers and people who managed farms and estates and so forth. What's really shocking here is that slaves are the ones that Peter addresses. Both Jewish and Greek thinking had codes of behavior a bit like this about how you should live. But neither of them ever mentioned slaves. Slaves just had to do what they were told. They had no choice, no freedom. Aristotle, the great philosopher, said you couldn't mistreat a slave.